Welcome to your commercial-free, uninterrupted investment show, sponsored by the SEC-registered investment firm, Wilsey Asset Management, a fiduciary firm owned and operated by President Brent Wilsey, who has been putting clients' investment needs first for over 40 years. The Smart Investing Show has been giving unbiased financial information for over 27 years on local radio stations right here in San Diego, providing you with fundamental analysis on stocks and investments you want to know about. Now, here are your hosts, Brent and Chase Wilsey.
Well, hello and welcome to the Smart Investing Show. I'm Brent Wilsey, president of Wilsey Asset Management. Great to have you here on the show today. We got a lot of good things to talk about. As always, the show just goes by so quick, but we're going to start off with, I'm sure you've heard about it, maybe you haven't, the lawsuit against Apple from the Department of Justice. We're going to go over that, our thoughts on it, what we think is going to happen. Also, too, you may have these target date funds. Well, we're going to talk about the target date funds, retirement assets, and target date funds, give you what we think about those. And then, very important, mind games of investing. Investing is very hard psychologically, so we're going to talk about the mind games that can be played investing. We'll go with that. And with me is Chase. Chase.
Yeah, as always, too, we want to take that later part of the show to kind of break down some different hot companies in the news. So today we are going to look at Ulta Beauty, Under Armour. I know their founder, the ex-CEO, Kevin Plank, he's returning. So I know their stock has not done well. Very excited to look at that one. Also, too, Chipotle, they're doing a stock split. The stock surged on that news. Curious to break down the fundamentals. And lastly, Adobe. There's a lot of, I'm going to say, AI hype around that stock and maybe how they can take part in the AI craze like every other technology company out there wanting to get in on that AI stock bump. So we'll break down those four companies, give you our opinions on the valuations, the balance sheet, the fundamentals, and see what the company looks like, tell you if we think it's a buy, sell, or hold, just based off the fundamentals we see.
Well, let's dive right into it because the lawsuit against Apple came out on Thursday, March 21st. The Department of Justice filed an antitrust lawsuit along with 16 states against Apple. The DOJ claims Apple's iPhone ecosystem is a monopoly that drove its astronomical valuation at the expense of consumers, developers, and rival phone makers. The lawsuit claims that Apple anti-competitive practices extend beyond the iPhone and Apple Watch business, citing Apple's advertising, browser, FaceTime, and news offerings. The DOJ also said in a release that to keep consumers buying iPhones, Apple moved to block cross-platform messaging apps, limited third-party wallet and smartwatch capability, and disrupted non-app store programs and cloud streaming services.
Also, too, with pressure surrounding the App Store in the EU, I do worry the expected growth from the services businesses could be under pressure. And this is one that, oh, yeah, well, iPhones aren't growing, but, you know, that services, it's growing very nicely. I worry that could have some problems. We have often said Apple is a great company, but trading at such lofty levels has left many investors open to declines in the value of their investment. The stock trading around $170 per share is down from the high over $200 per share. And while the lawsuit will likely take a couple years to go through the court system, it could have a major impact on the growth of Apple earnings. At our company, Wilsey Asset Management, we do continue to believe that Apple is overpriced and just frankly has no potential for growth going forward. Looking out a couple years from now, the stock could still be trading around these levels due to the high valuation and limited prospect for business growth. We do believe it's very possible for the stock to drop at least another 10 to 20% based off this news, especially if it continues to, I'm going to say, be quite prevalent in the headlines here.
And I think it could even more than that. When we wrote this, we're kind of, I guess, trying to be nice to Apple shareholders. But when you think about this, this is really going to be, we're talking about no growth, and that was before this came out. The problem is, if Apple has to change the way they're doing stuff and open things up, and there's things that came out in this, like, and I forget the exact details, but there was one person they asked about, I think it was actually Tim Cook, and he said he had trouble sending his wife or mom
his
or
mom.
Someone, his mom, information, and Tim Cook just responded, well, buy an Apple phone. And then there's another guy that said, well, you know, if this goes through, why wouldn't somebody just go to the garage sale and get a $50 phone if you can just message everybody and send texts and it's not going to be a problem? This could really destroy two things. One, the money that Apple's making off of all these services, and the price of a phone at $1,500. That would have to fall dramatically.
I mean, there's a lot of potential issues here. I mean, because Apple, what they've called it is the walled garden, essentially. Once you have the iPhone, they've been able to kind of protect their services businesses because they don't have any competitors. They're the only app store in there. Your Apple Wallet, they were saying as well, there's no other competitors that can come into your Apple Wallet, essentially, or a wallet-type app where you can kind of have those payments. So, I mean, that is very concerning because those are very high margin businesses for Apple. I mean, you have the App Store. Once you're in there, I think Apple collects like a 30% fee from those app developers. And, you know, Spotify actually sued them in the EU, I think, for like $2 billion because, you know, I kind of get it. Why does Spotify have to pay 30% of their, you know, revenue coming in from each consumer to Apple? And double check those numbers. I didn't read through it. I believe it's 30%. It's still a very high number that Apple collects from those, you know, app developers, essentially. And creating a new app store in there that somebody else can come in, it's like, oh, I'm not going to charge Spotify 30%. I'll charge them 10%. And that competition could lower the revenue that Apple gets from its app store, which I just don't see how any of that is good news.
And again, I'm not big on government. I usually am against these suits that the DOJ brings up, like the one on Microsoft or that division. I thought that was a silly one. This one, I think, has some merit. Now, keep in mind, this is not going to take place for probably at least a couple of years. But in the meantime, as it goes through the courts, I think people will hear more and more stuff and realize that I think there's a very good chance it's going to pass through. And just think about it. I mean, Apple has really made it so you cannot really leave their ecosystem. Imagine if it was that way, like gas in your car. Well, you know, some...
You don't want to go to Chevron.
No, go to Chevron. That's all you can do. Like, well, that's not fair. The old phones. I mean, if you had to have different things, there's so many things that the government does have to make sure that it's fair for everybody to compete in. Apple is a great company, but they've really taken advantage of their... Well, they're now a monopoly of what they do, and that's going to change.
Well, and frankly, you could see more innovation in payment methods. You could see more innovation in the App Store. I mean, you could see more competition, which is great, and I believe in business, and I believe in Apple creating a great product, but the way they've kind of been able to wall out the competitors is concerning. And, you know, one other thing on Apple is kind of from the subject is I was watching CNBC and Jim Cramer's like, well, the Vision Pro and, you know, the Vision Pro, I think they're missing it. You're going to be able to, I think, you know, sell cars and sell homes. And I'm like, what? I would never, I mean, you look so foolish when you're wearing the Vision Pro and pretending to drive a car and that's going to be what's going to be the determining factor for you buying. I don't think that'll happen. I mean, we've talked about this now for a few years with the whole metaverse thing, and that was supposed to be the same thing. I don't think that's going to happen. I think that it's just a fad, and I just don't see anybody buying a tangible product that is such a big investment like a home based on... I say anybody, people have bought houses sight unseen, so a small portion of people will be okay buying it via the Vision Pro. It's not like 70% of consumers are going to be like, oh, I saw this beautiful house on my Vision Pro and I bought it. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, it could be the start of the research, but not the end of the research. So, all right, let's move on to retirement assets and target date funds. I was so disappointed to read recently that Vanguard has 63% of the U.S. retirement assets allocated to target date funds. I cannot stress what a poor investment these are. They make nice fees for Wall Street, and people think it's an easy way to retire, but the allocation and the numbers are just so wrong. A good example is as recent as 2022 when the bond index went down 14% that year.
Based on the theory of target date funds here and how they are invested, most of a 65-year-old retiree's money, well, it would have been invested in bonds. On a $1 million account, a 14% decline would have led to an account value of $860,000. And now, a couple of years later, yeah, bonds are still lower. Your interest payments that you've gotten have not recouped the amount that you've lost on those bond prices either. I do believe in buying and holding, but you must understand what you're holding and why you're holding it. It does make sense to just implement, I'm sorry, it does not make sense just to implement a blind strategy there. If you have a target date fund, highly recommend that you sit down with a knowledgeable financial advisor, really understands and can explain how they work. And yes, we are available if you do have questions about your target dates funds there.
And everybody wants an easy way to invest in retirement. It sounds so nice. And Wall Street will take advantage of you. I'm sorry about this, but they will take advantage of you saying, here, do this. And there are some target date funds now that have brought down their fees, but a lot of them have not. And sometimes it's a fee on top of the fee because they'll use a bond fund, an equity fund. They charge a fee. Then the target date fund charges a fee. So your fees could be extremely high, 1 to maybe 1.5%, trying to take it easy. And the problem is they really don't work because you could retire when things are completely different, like 2022, as we talked about.
Yeah, it just rules of thumb, as we have always said, never make sense to us. I mean, we want to buy good investments at good prices, regardless of a stock, a bond, real estate. We want to make sure that we're getting good values. And when interest rates were at 1%, no, it didn't make sense to buy bonds. And we railed against that concept. But the simple methodology of the target date fund was, yeah, you just put this amount in bonds because, you know, you're older. Silliest thing you can do.
Yeah. And I, again, a lot of people want to make it the easy way to do it. Brokers, a lot of them will make it easy. Just, yeah, do this and, you know, still pay me a fee every year, but don't bother me because you're set with a target date fund. It just does not work, and people will be disappointed. They will do much better by actually having it managed and looking at what's going on with bonds, with equities. And again, I don't think they use, and they might use real estate in the portfolio.
They could. Yeah. I've seen some other target date funds that use different asset classes. And I was going to say, I don't know if I've seen this, but gosh, if you have a financial advisor and they use target date funds, oh my gosh, that's a fee on top of a fee on top of a fee. Because you're paying a fee to the advisor, a fee to the target date fund, and potentially a fee to the mutual funds within the target date fund. So be careful. These are, again, sold as a very easy way to invest. And I'll tell you, it's better than sitting in cash long term, but investing properly, it shouldn't be as easy as clicking a button. You need to still have good research. You need to understand the investments. And yeah, you need to look long-term, but you can't look long-term with the wrong investments.
Yeah. And again, 63% from Vanguard use those target date funds. Yeah. That's terrible. So talking about terrible, let's talk about the mind games of investing. I learned a new word last weekend called counterfactual. Now, in my 40-plus years of investing, I believed what this word meant, but I just didn't know what there was a word that described what I knew. What I'm talking about here gets kind of confusing. What I'm talking about, as it stares in your face, where you would have been if you would have bought Microsoft, Nvidia, or Tesla a few years ago. The emotional psyche is great at tricking the big misses and convincing you why you should have invested, but it never seems to remember the investment losses that you missed because you didn't take that risk. Over the years, we've talked many times about these types of companies, many, many times. Just to remind you, take a look at the cannabis companies or during the pandemic, had you invested in Zoom or Peloton.
More recently, we also discussed in our newsletter about had you invested in electric vehicle companies, well, you would have lost about 90% of your investment had you purchased at the top. Again, look at the charts for Lucid. Look at the charts for Rivian. Not done well if you haven't seen them in a while. Thing you got to understand is investing, it's hard. Throughout your lifetime, there will always be some companies that, you know, air quotes here, that you knew were going to go up, but that's after the fact. Come back to reality and you realize if you can average about 10% on your investments in 21 years, a $100,000 investment will be worth close to $800,000. But if you lost principal along the way by taking on risk, you may not even have your $100,000. And if one of your friends tells you they bought one of these high flyers and they brag about it, ask them percentage-wise, how much does it make up of their portfolio? More than likely, well, it'll be less than 1%. But even at 1%, be sure to inform them that the investment, even if it doubles in price, would only add a 1% increase to their entire portfolio. So, you know, I'll pick on Nvidia. If it went up 100% this year, let's say, and it was 1% of your portfolio instead of doing 10% for the year, well, great, you would have done 11%. But you got to tell people you held Nvidia, you know?
Right.
And if you would like to use the new word counterfactual, well, the definition is what might have been, and imaginary alternative to the actual past.
And this is so important because, again, I've known this has happened, and it's just it's like the person goes to Vegas. They'll always remember when they won, but they'll forget all the times they lost. And it's the same thing with investing. And that's why you always think you're doing terrible. And you think, oh, everybody else is doing better than me. No, they're not. But they only tell you the good part. And we try to bring things back down to the normal levels. Say, look, if you can earn 10% on your investments on average, you're going to do very well. But when you try shoot for those high flyers and you buy, we'll say NVIDIA, what's it at, 900, is it going to go to 1,800? I'm not going to say no, but it's not likely. Possible, but not likely is what I usually say. Is it more likely down the road? It could be cut in half because something happens. So you've got to be realistic when it comes to investing, because if not, you're going to do very, very poor investment decisions.
Well, especially because you look at your principles or your reasons for investing. Yeah, I mean, you sit here today and, oh, I invested in NVIDIA because of AI. I'm happy that worked out for you. It's done very, very well. But the same people that were investing in the cannabis stocks, oh, well, they thought since it was going to be legalized, it was going to be this huge opportunity. Or the EVs. Everybody thought EVs were going to take on a much faster kind of ramp towards being part of our society, or larger part of our society, I should say. That didn't happen. So the problem is some of these trends, you're right, they will catch on. And frankly, we will miss them. But we're not going to get sucked into the hype of the EVs, or another one we talk about is the SPACs and things like that, where you lose big time. You'll win sometimes investing in the trends, but more often than not, you're going to lose big time trying to chase the hype.
Yeah, and it's just something that you have to control your emotions. That's why Wilsey Asset Management, our slogan has been for many, many years, no emotions, just results, because of counterfactual. I like that word.
And I just want to reemphasize it too, is the hardest part about the way we invest money is you have to be okay missing the NVIDIAs.
Yeah.
We will never buy the NVIDIAs. And we're okay with that because we will never buy the Rivians at $120 a share either.
Right.
You have to know your philosophy and why you stick to that philosophy, not for 1 month, for 2 years, why you do it for 10, 15, 20 years. That's why we know and feel very comfortable with our philosophy because it's worked for a long time. And yeah, it's like, gosh, would I love to buy NVIDIA years ago? Yeah, 100%. But also, too, that's the type of person that gets sucked in and loses 90% like they did during the tech boom and bust.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what you have to look at. Stay disciplined. All right, that's all comes from our newsletter, the Smart Investing Newsletter. It goes out every Friday at 5 o'clock. Other things that on that newsletter you might enjoy, talking about the banning of TikTok. We discussed that. We talk about the dollar stores closing, what's going on there. Investing in Bitcoin, still a hot topic. I think it is down from a high of, 73,000. I think I saw like 62,000. You know, some information on that for you. Healthcare costs, liquid money in the U.S., all these important things to make you a smart investor. Go to our website, smartinvesting2000.com. That's smartinvesting2000.com. It's right in the middle of the page. Just click on newsletter. You'll sign up for it. It'll be in your inbox every Friday at 5 o'clock. All right, time to switch over gears and talk about financial planning. For that, we turn to our CFP, our financial planner, Harrison Johnson. Harrison, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you doing?
Good, good. I like this topic here, mortgage points and lender credits. Let's dive into that a little bit.
Yeah, so I know we have Robert who calls in and contributes to the show, and he's a mortgage broker. And sometimes I like to look at things from a different perspective, even though we might agree on the end outcome. But when you get a mortgage or when you apply for a mortgage, there's a lot more to consider than just the interest rate. So when you get a mortgage, there's closing costs that include things like title and escrow fees that are not part of the loan itself. Then there's prepaid interest, which is the interest that accrues from the closing date through the remainder of the month. And since mortgage payments are paid in arrears, your first payment will be 2 months after the month you close. So for example, if you close your mortgage at the beginning of April, let's say, you'll have more prepaid interest at closing since you'll have to pay interest for the bulk of April. But you won't have to make your next payment until the middle of June. Also, at closing, you might have points or credits. A mortgage point is an extra fee you pay in exchange for a lower interest rate. A lender credit is the opposite, where you receive a higher interest rate, but the lender will provide you funds that can be applied to closing costs and prepaid interest. You can also choose to pay no points and receive no credits for an interest rate in the middle, which is called the par rate. So, for example, if you were to get a mortgage right now, your par rate might be 7%, or you could pay a few $1,000 in points to receive a 6.75% rate, or you could receive a few $1,000 in credits in exchange for a 7.25% rate. Where with interest rates are at now, pretty much everyone agrees that mortgage rates will be coming down in the coming months and the years. And this means if you're considering buying or refinancing, even if you're using a 30-year mortgage, it's best to think of it as a 6, 7, or 8 month loan, as there should be an opportunity to refinance in a few months at a lower rate. Therefore, if you're getting a loan now, you might want to structure that loan so you have the lowest overall cost during the next 6 to 8 months. And during a decreasing interest rate environment, this typically means accepting a higher interest rate and using the accompanying lender credits to cover as much closing costs and interest as possible. You might pay a few $100 more in interest over the next several months, but that's worth it if you receive a few $1,000 in credits up front.
And Harrison, as you're going through this, I mean, you're a CFP, a financial planner. You do cover a lot of different bases for people. And you tell me what you do here, but I think what you're looking at, because you're not going to go into detail of this for people, but you can recognize for them, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you can recognize for them saying, you know what, you need to find a new mortgage guy because he's not really looking at this like Robert B. Hick does. Is that what you're looking at? Because it takes a lot to go through this, doesn't it?
It does, and usually when you get a loan, many times your lender or whoever you're working with will give you a couple different options and say, well, you can pay some points and it'll be this interest rate, or you can get some credits and it'll be this interest rate. And really, it depends on where interest rates are going. You know, a couple of years ago when interest rates were at 2%, I would say it might make sense to pay some points to bring that rate down lower because you'll probably have that loan for a very long time. But where what interest rates are at right now, you know, you might only have your loan for a couple months until you refinance again. So, you know, you can use lender credits to cover escrow fees, title fees, appraisal fees, and things like that. And that's kind of where I can come in as a financial planner and say, you know what, your mortgage lender is saying this, but, you know, you might want to go in this direction because, you know, it's going to bring your overall cost down and then, you know, you get extra tax benefits from it.
And Harrison, this is one thing that we do at Will CS Management is that we do have I call it a maintenance fee for the financial planning clients where they could call you and say, hey, Harrison, I'm buying a new home. This is where you kind of look at it to say, well, look at these things, look at that. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I've got a couple people right now that are going to be thinking about buying a home, and this is something that you'd want to look at. And again, you have to understand where the market is, what interest rates are at, how that's going to change, because you know, the advice right now is going to be different than the advice a year ago or 6 months from now or whatever. And you always want to be making the right decision based on the information that you have. And so, you know, when you look at mortgage points and credits, there is a better way to go. And a lot of people, I think, just look at it at face value and say, oh, well, I like a lower interest rate, so I'm going to go with that. But again, you know, the higher interest rate might be better if you can get credits to cover it. So you really have to look at the big picture and understand how that fits into your situation.
Yeah, and I know you always look at like the tax side. You always want to make sure you're kind of pulling in all the information, because what might work for one person won't work for another person at the end of the day. And I know that's what you do a great job of, is kind of pulling that all together to look at the cash flow, look at the taxes, and look at, you know, the monthly payments, the interest rate. And some components are going to be great in these situations and not as great in other situations, but it really depends on the person's situation.
Yeah, and this is really meant to act as a complement to the mortgage broker that they're working with, you know, because they have their perspective and, you know, they might agree, but this is another unbiased perspective that says, you know, this is the direction that you should go and here's why. So, you know, again, you want to understand the whole picture.
Great. Well, again, this is why, again, the fee-based financial planner makes so much sense, because you're not just trying to sell them a product. You're looking at, again, mortgages, the taxes, the estate. I mean, all these different things. That's what they turn to first, is a fee-based planner like yourself to see what the best direction is to go.
Yep. And any recommendation I make is there shouldn't be any conflict of interest, because, again, we don't sell anything. So it's comforting to get that perspective.
Great. Well, Harrison, thank you very much. You have a great weekend, and we'll see you on Monday.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll see you on Monday.
Okay. Bye-bye. Again, that's Harrison Johnson. He is our financial planner. He's a CFP. He's on a fee-based plan. on a salary, does not charge commission, does not sell any product. It is truly a fee-based plan. You can get a free consultation by simply going to the website, smartinvesting2000.com. That's smartinvesting2000.com. You can actually send Harrison an email from there. If you want to call him directly at the office, call 858-224-0004. Again, that's 858-224-0004. And just hit the prompt for Harrison Johnson, and we'll talk to him, set up a time to talk to him. All righty. I'm very excited about our companies today, especially the first one we're going to start off with here, Chase, and Alter Beauty. And I'm so excited about this because, you know, I go shopping with my wife. We always go – we don't go to Alter Beauty. We go to Sephora. And I think they're owned by
LVMH.
LVMH. Place is always packed, and women – buying makeup and opera. I don't know what they're buying there. I don't think I've ever walked out of there paying less than $300. It's just amazing.
I don't know the last time I went. So
I know. I'm that husband like, okay, I'll go. You know, try to be the good husband.
Well, my wife likes, what's the name of the place? I don't remember. It's down in One Paseo. Shopgood is the name of the place. So she likes to go to Shopgood to get her beauty products. So I've been there, but I haven't really been to Sephora.
Check it out sometime. Well, actually, we're going to talk about Ulta Beauty. We've been in Ulta Beauty, and I got to be frank, I didn't like it as much as Sephora. It seemed a little bit more disorganized. But let's take a look at that. We're going to have to kind of take a break here quick, but I want to kind of get started on this because I want to complete all four companies if we can today. Ulta Beauty, their symbol is ULTA. They're in the specialty retail industry, only 3.7% short float there, so no one's really shorting this stock. 93.9% institutional owned. PE ratio 20. That is below the industry at 23.8. Price of sales 2.3 versus 0.9. That's expensive. So is the price to book value, 11.1 versus 5.3. Price of cash flow, also expensive, 17.5 versus 11.9. However, the PEG ratio, PEG ratio also expensive, 2.8 versus 1.5. You want that lower than the industry average. Now, not much growth here on the earnings. Last year, up 2.7%. The industry was up 17.9%. Sales, however, did climb by 6.6% when the industry was down 1.5%. And then the five-year gross estimate going forward, 7.2%, about the same as the industry, but actually less than the industry at 8.4%. Disappointed here to see they do not pay a dividend. Taking a look at the balance sheet here, we do see they got a current ratio of 1.5 versus 1.3. And there's the music. So I'm going to come back to the balance sheet when we come back from this break here. You are listening to Smart Investing Show with Brenton Chase. Stay with us. We're going to pick up on Ulta Beauty. We've got Under Armour, Chipotle, many different things to talk about. Stay with us. Alrighty, welcome back to the Smart Investing Show. When we left off for the break here, we were talking about Ulta Beauty. We got to the balance sheet talking about the current ratio, which shows liquidity of company, 1.5 versus 1.3 for the industry. So that gives you a little more liquidity. Very important for a company, too, is their debt. And we always look at debt to equity, 1, same as the industry, so that's okay. Net profit margin for Ulta Beauty looks very good, 11.4 versus 3.8. Now, keep in mind, that means for every dollar that they bring in, they keep about 11 cents on that dollar. And then return on equity, very high, 61 versus 52.9. And return on invested capital is 30 versus 22.4. So those two look pretty good. Chase, what do you got?
Yeah, so I was just kind of looking here, and I know Ulta just reported earnings last week, and looks like they hit a couple hiccups, I guess I'll call it. Looks like they fell around 5-6% after they reported earnings. The big thing I found interesting, I was looking here at comparable sales, which looks at sales at stores that were open over the previous 12 months. It looks like they had a gain of comparable sales of 2.5%. But last year, those comparable sales grew 15.6%.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, you're seeing a huge deceleration, obviously.
And I was going to say, that's from COVID, because when during COVID, people weren't buying makeup, so that's kind of ending of the COVID period where people really start buying makeup again, being out in public, I guess.
Yeah, and it looks like those comp sales, they were expecting 3%, so the 2.5% was a little bit lighter than anticipated. It looks like going forward, they are looking for comparable sales of 4-5%. So, I mean, I think this is still a industry, obviously, that's likely to grow, but do want to look at the numbers going forward to see if the valuations make sense for that potential growth. Starting with the current price here for, again, Ulta Beauty, it's $520.37. I see the 52-week low here, $368.02. Wow, and the 52-week high, $574.76. Obviously, a good-sized company here with a market cap of about $25.4 billion. So, as I said, going forward, we're going to go out to January 2026. We did just move to a new fiscal year. We're going to take the estimated earnings per share here of $29.48. Gives us a target sell price of $489.37. So, trades at a forward PE multiple of about 17, 18 times. Unfortunately, again, that target sell price is below the current price of $520.37. So wouldn't be a buyer here of Ulta Beauty. It's just a little bit too expensive. As I said, I think it's a very interesting category that, frankly, I don't see going anywhere, but just too expensive for us.
And it is a good product because for years, I mean, it's a product that people, women, will continue to buy. And the problem with the Ultra Beauty is that it's too expensive. So you've got to wait maybe next quarter they report again, and it still wasn't good. Maybe the stock falls down to, you know, 400 for, you know, and I think you said the target sell price is what, 420, I think you said?
No, it was, I think, like 490 or 470.
Oh, 490.
Yeah, 489.
So it'd have to fall to mid-350s or, you know, 370 or something. That would be the time to buy a company like this because it should weather storms going forward, but you can't overpay for these businesses.
The time to buy it was during COVID when it was at $148 a share. Obviously, people weren't thinking they were going to still be going out. Everybody thought they were going to stay home. It was the inverse of the stay-at-home stocks, and that was obviously the time to buy. I remember looking at this one because I was like, I think this could be good because they had the balance sheet that was clean, but obviously you can only have so many arrows in your quiver, so to speak, and, you know, buy so many businesses.
And I remember we did look at a lot of different companies. I mean, it was like we were kids in a candy store because everything was pretty much on sale. And that year, COVID year, we had, I think our best year we had since 2009. But there's just so many great things to buy, so many great businesses. Those are super sales, we'll call them. You've got to sometimes be patient to get a good sale on a business. And again, I like the business, but I got to say that when I go into Ulta Beauty versus Sephora, much better than Sephora. They've got their act together. So
I don't have an opinion on that. I don't know. I've only been to Ulta Beauty once, so I drive by it on Carl Mountain Road, and it looks like it's always pretty full.
Pretty full, yeah. Take your wife, Taylor, there and see what she thinks. Have you been there before at all or no?
Just once.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was clean. I thought the store was nice, but
yeah. Well, let's move on to Under Armour because this was a company. Under Armour, gosh, they blew up years ago, and they were all over the place, and everybody wanted Under Armour. And I believe the CEO left. What was his name again?
Kevin Plank.
I think he left. And this happens many times. Happened to Starbucks. Happened to other companies where the CEO that is really good CEO, they end up leaving and the company doesn't do as well.
And he was the founder as well.
Yeah.
So it was kind of his baby, so to speak. And then I think he stepped back, and obviously I don't think he's too happy with the way it's done.
Well, he probably owns a good portion of it. So let's look at the numbers because maybe this big pullback is time to look at Under Armour. Their symbol is UA. They own the apparel manufacturing. Institutional ownership, 75.8. There's no float on this at all, no short float at all, so that's a positive. We do see that the PE ratio, very good, 7.7 versus 28.2. Price to sales, 0.5 versus 1.1. Price to book value, 1.8 versus 15. And then price to cash flow is 7.6 versus 9.3. And here is a good PEG ratio, 0.9 versus 12.4. You are not paying very much at all for the future growth of this company. Now, over the last year, the earnings are up 89.4%. Sales, unfortunately, could be the problem, only climbed by 0.7%. The industry grew by 2.6%. They do not pay a dividend. Very important is the balance sheet. We see a current ratio 2.1 versus 1.8, so a lot of liquidity for the company. Debt to equity 0.7, below the industry at 1.1. That's a positive. Net profit margin, very good, 7 versus 4.1. Return on equity, 18.5. Return on invested capital, 11.2. I'm liking what I'm seeing here. It's going to be up to you. Well, not up to you, but what we see from the analysts, what the analysts think about it going forward.
Yeah, well, to start here, and the hard thing with Under Armour, I know, is they have two different share classes. So the one I'm looking at is UA, is the ticker symbol. It's, again, Under Armour, Inc. Current price is $6.89. I see the 52-week low here, $5.86, and the 52-week high, $8.99. Not a great start to the year, down about 17.5%. Even looking over the last 5 years, yeah, stock has just not done well. Over the last 5 years, down 63%. Now, it's funny because I feel like we've looked at Under Armour occasionally over the last, again, about 5 years, and it would have these big falls, and it's like, still not there. Still not an option. Interestingly enough, it's very close finally. I go out to March 2025. I do see estimated earnings per share here of 55 cents. Would give us a target sell price of $9.13. So let's do some quick math on that here real quick. Let's see. Gosh, forward PE is about 12.9 times, trying to get the differential in the target sell price. But it looks like it might be teetering on a buy and coming out of that hold category, essentially.
Yeah, so the buy would probably be somewhere, we'll call it around 6, maybe 6.50 a share. May want to watch because this is...
No, I'm wrong. It'd be a 32.5% estimated gain there. So this would be a buy. We have that 30% margin of safety. It's a buy currently.
Wow, okay.
Based off the numbers, don't run out and buy it on Monday. I'm just... there'd still be some more research, obviously, that would have to be done. One thing I would say is this category is obviously extremely... competitive. I mean, you have Nike, you have now Lululemon, you have, you know, Vuori here in San Diego.
Lululemon reported earnings last week or this past week, and they stumbled.
I made a note. I want to maybe look at them next week. But, you know, the point being is they're still growing. It's just not growing as fast as they were. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a very, very competitive market. I know Adidas is still there. They've kind of been struggling. I mean, what is it? I almost said Roebuck.
Reebok. Hey, Reebok's still around.
Reebok's still around, I think. I just don't think they're doing as well as Under Armour going to kind of go that route. So, I mean, there's a lot of considerations there, but I got to say the numbers, they look pretty good.
And I think Kevin Plank, because I remember Under Armour was like they started getting, you know, NFL teams and colleges, and it seems like when he left, things just – no one did the marketing. Nothing happened to it. So with him back, this could be a good investment because you are getting a great company on sale. As I said, they had, you know, good profit margin. Gosh, your profit margin was very good. The debt looked fine, current ratio. I mean, this is one that I think people should really do some research on because, I don't think I announced the five-year growth rate. 21.8% versus 3.7.
See, but you say you're getting a great company on sale. I don't know if it's a great company anymore. That's what I'd have to spend the time doing research because I know a few years ago when I was playing football, you know, that's kind of when Under Armour was coming out, and that's really when they were starting to blow up. They had, you know, the good material on the shirts.
Yeah, that's right.
And they were really coming out with, you know, Cam Newton. He was an NFL quarterback. He was big at the time. He had his own cleat. It was the Cam Newtons. They were kind of these high-top cleats, essentially. And they were always in the news. I cannot remember the last time being a sports fan that I've really seen much go on with Under Armour.
And I think the CEO, Kevin Plank, will probably be working to turn that around. Yeah. And again, the five-year estimated growth from the analyst, 21.8%, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued, but there's definitely more that would have to happen on the research front.
And we tell people, too, when we're investing in a company, I mean, we're giving you the fundamentals, trying to point in the right direction. But for us, it's, you know, 10, 15, 20 hours of research. We want to understand maybe some things that Kevin Plank is going to do. What is the problem? Why is, you know, Under Armour not as exciting as it used to be? What is the competition? Because you're right, they were the first one to come out with those, I'll call them sweat-free shirts or whatever.
Yeah, you didn't get all sticky.
So maybe Kevin Plank will come up with something else. But I think it's worth the research, but spend the time. But I wouldn't mind adding this to our watch list. What do you think?
Already done.
Oh, cool. All right. All righty. Let's see. So that takes care of Under Armour. Let's see. Robert? Yeah. Let's change gears. Got a couple companies in there. Let's change gears and talk about the real estate market. And for that, we turn to our mortgage real estate expert, Robert Behick. Robert, how you doing?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good, good. I forgot to announce to you that you're from Countywide Mortgage Lending. I like our topic today because a lot of people are talking about it. And what we're talking about is, what is your opinion or your thoughts? When is the Fed going to lower interest rates? That's a big question on a lot of people's mind. What's your opinion?
Our opinion is that we should see the first cut at the June meeting, which is two meetings out. But that doesn't mean mortgage rates won't start coming down prior to that if they start forecasting that indeed that's what's going to happen.
And Robert, one thing too that does happen too, because it is based on rates, but is it also based on the institutions? I mean, do they want to do mortgages now? Do they need more mortgages? How busy are they? How much staff do they have? Is there a lot of more things when it comes to the mortgage rate than just the lowering of rates?
It's so true. And right now, the mortgage industry could use more business. It is definitely slowing because purchases have been slowing. But they're still going on, and they're going on at a pretty strong market. Actually showed some data this morning that sales increased a lot more than we expected month over month from last month.
And I think I saw existing home sales, and this is nationwide, but I think inventory is finally starting to creep up a little bit more too, which should be beneficial for overall sales, if I'm not mistaken.
You're absolutely right, Chase. However, this time of year, that's pretty normal. Mm-hmm. We usually say Easter is the unofficial start of the real estate selling season because you think you're going to take 30 to 60 days to put your house on the market, get it sold, get moved, and the kids will be at summer vacation. So it's really, this is the time of year where we should start to see some inventory actually come back on the market.
And Robert, you're one of the top 100 mortgage companies in America since 2012. I mean, you've been around for quite a while. You talk about 1 or 2 months. I mean, going back, wasn't that different years ago that took longer to sell a house? And people come, oh, I can't sell a house right now. What was your thought on that?
Because of the demand right now and the lack of supply, even though it has come up, it's just come up a little bit, that the time right now is to buy. And the reason why is when rates do go down here in June, and they're forecasting they're going to do it three times, a quarter each meeting is what's on the table right now, prices will go up. And so it would cost you more to wait for a lower interest rate because the prices went up less than 3% than if you would take action now. So it really is an opportune, a window, if you would. And I've seen these throughout my career for the next 60 days or so.
One thing, too, I feel like we may have talked about this, and it might have just been you and I, but, you know, we always talk about how the Fed cuts get so much more, I'm going to say, of the headline news. But in reality, I believe that it's the quantitative tightening, quantitative easing, because that's where they're actually stepping in to either let the mortgage-backed securities run off the balance sheet or buy more of those mortgage-backed securities to kind of add to the balance sheet. Personally, I think that is going to have a larger impact on the mortgage rates, but it just doesn't get the type of news that the Fed cuts do.
You're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, he alluded to that in the day before yesterday's meeting, where he actually went through his stats and talked about how the Fed is going to be dealing with that quantitative easing and seeing how their balance sheets are going to happen. Because of the banking situation that's out there, there's a lot of moving parts, and that spread for servicing should actually start to come down, which will allow for lower interest rates for mortgages.
And Robert, you've been doing this again for many years, and you talked about how that people, when rates come down, prices will go up. Do you actually, someone gives you a call and say, well, can you prove that to me? Do you actually have some formula or some program you use to say, look, you're buying this house for, we're gonna make it easy, $1 million. Here's the rate you'll pay now. If it goes up 3% on a lower rate, this is what you'll pay, to show them the actual numbers?
We have statute data that will actually go and show you exactly what the projections have been. And the things that have happened. And that data really validates the things that we're talking about. I mean, it's significant over a long period of time. You're talking about $350 to $360 a month on a $750,000 loan for the next 30 years. That's pretty substantial.
Okay, well, Robert, that's why you're here, to have people call you to actually, knowledge is the power, and you supply that knowledge for people so they can make good decisions when it comes to buying and, I guess, even selling a home or refinancing there. So we want to appreciate, thank you for having your time here with us, and we'll talk more next week.
It all starts with a conversation. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Okay, Robert, have a good one. Bye-bye.
You too.
Bye. Okay. Again, that is Robert Behick. He is president of Countywide Mortgage Lending. Give him a call. This is his cell phone number, 760-443-3821. That's 760-443-3821. Or go to the website, countywidemtg.com. Again, that's countywidemtg.com.
And just as a reminder here, Countywide Mortgage Lending is a division of Golden Empire Mortgage, Inc., NMLS number 1104585, licensed by the Department of Financial Protection and Innovation under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. Countywide Mortgage Lending is an equal housing lender and proud member of the BBB.
All right. I'm very excited about this next company as well.
You're making me hungry.
Well, making me hungry. But I don't really like, we're talking about Chipotle. I've gone
had
there.
It in years.
I know it. I need to go back in and try it again. We almost did it yesterday. I said, no, let's, where did we go? We want to do it in Alberta instead versus Chipotle. But they've got some big things going on. They're going to be doing a stock split of 50-1. They've always been very expensive. We're going to go over these numbers, talk about it more. But again, we're talking about Chipotle Mexican Grill, symbol is CMG, only 3% short on the float, 93.5% institutional owned. Here's the big problem with the, we call the burrito company, P.E. ratio, 64.8 versus 28.1. Now, that tells you that it's going to take you almost 65 years to get back what you pay for the stock based on the current earnings. We do see price of sales also expensive, 8.1 versus 2.7. Price to book value, 26 versus not material for the industry. Price of cash flow, 44.7 versus 17.7. Here is a surprise, PEG ratio, 2.4, that is below the industry of 5.9, so surprise on that one. I don't know how they're doing this, but the earnings per share growth over the last year, 38.4% growth on those burritos, but the industry's at 59.5. Their sales were up over the last year, 14.3 versus 3.9, and the analysts give this a five-year growth on those earnings of 23.2%. There's 11.7. I have no idea where that growth is going to come from. So if you're looking to buy this company, please be careful. Look at the balance sheet. Current ratio, 1.6 versus 1.1. That is a positive. Debt to equity, not too bad. 1.3 versus 1. Net profit margin is very good. 12.5% versus 9.6. And return on equity is also very good. 40.1. We look at ROE or return on equity at over 15%. Chase, what do you got going forward?
Yeah, so looking at the current price here for, again, Chipotle Mexican Grill, ticker symbol CMG, it's $2,882.04. That number will be changing here. I forget when that stock split goes through, but it will be changing here shortly, and it'll be cut essentially by a 50th. doesn't mean the stock's going to go down. Obviously, we'll get more shares to counter out that stock split. But the 52-week range for Chipotle, the low, $1,609.13, and the high here, $3,023.98. I just kind of saw some news here. It looks like Chipotle actually had a string of about seven straight winning sessions. And this, again, we talk about it, and it seems like, oh, we're doing a stock split, and the stock goes up for a few percent, and it doesn't change the business at all in terms of the fundamentals, the earnings, the sales, the book value. It just means there will now be more shares outstanding, essentially. But hey, makes people happy, I guess, short term. We're more concerned about the long term, though, and that's really where I guess my concerns are. You go out to December 2025, I see estimated earnings per share here, $64.73, gives it a target sell price of $1,074.52, well below that current price of nearly $3,000. And I mean, it means it trades at a forward PE of, again, close to 50 times. I just, it's a burrito company, as you said. It's not. Again, this is more expensive than NVIDIA. I'm not giving condolences to people to go out and go buy NVIDIA, but it's just ludicrous that Chipotle could be more expensive than stocks going through the AI hype. And I mean, yes, it looks like earnings are expected to grow around 20% over the next 2 years, at least based off these analyst estimates. But where is that growth coming from? I mean, is it from opening new stores? I got to imagine here in California, I know they have a decent amount of stores. All the changes to the minimum wage here has half to weigh on earnings, because that's going to be a hefty expense in terms of labor.
And they could be going international. I believe they are already, but maybe they plan on opening more international stores. The thing that they did, which is good and bad, is they said the reason why they did the 50-to-1 split was to help out employees so they could buy more shares, because it's very hard to buy one share at $2,882. Now their employees can buy, you know, 10 shares for $500. That is good for them. But what bothers me is that now you have these employees that are paying, you said what, 50 times forward earnings for this company?
Yeah.
I mean, nothing can sustain that level. Sooner or later, either the earnings have to come up dramatically, about 2 to 3 times, or the stock will have to fall. And this has been defeating this normalcy, we'll call, for, I'm going to say, years. It will not go on forever. And the problem is, this could be the downfall where all of a sudden the little guy gets in and he buys, you know, 10 shares, 20 shares because he can get it for $500,000. Then he loses money and says, oh, stocks are risky, it was terrible. No, they did a silly thing.
Well, I mean, what could be the downfall is, instead of getting that 20% growth, all of a sudden they come in with 13% growth, which, yeah, it's still good. But
right,
if you're paying nearly 50 times future earnings for a company, you better be growing at nearly 20%. And that moment you trip up on growth, that's where the nasty falls can happen very quickly. And all of a sudden the stock, it's hard because I don't want to do the math right now in my head based off 3,000 divided by 50. You know, I guess what it is, 60?
I did it. $2,882 divided by 50 is the stock price of $57.64.
Yeah. So, it's just, you could see that stock go from 60 down to 30 very quickly if that growth just isn't there.
Yeah. And it's just a shame that is going to happen to, again, the little guy. They're going to say stocks are risky. I do want to say, though, the company does a lot of good things. They do provide education, a tuition program for their employees. They have good benefits. It's a well-run company. But as an investment goes, it just cannot sustain this level. And this is why people say stocks are risky, because they'll go out and buy a Chipotle and not make money.
I always kind of like, too, that they actually, I believe that they don't franchise. I think they actually own all their stores.
Do they?
I believe.
Did you see how many stores they have? You probably didn't see that.
No, I didn't get to pull that up. But I've liked kind of that concept, where sometimes the franchise base is difficult, because, you know, you got to make sure your franchisees know what they're doing and can run the store to make sure it's kept nice, essentially.
Yeah. So it's again, if you like it, you got a lot of research to do on it. But I just don't think it's worth the time, and this could go on for years at this level. But someday, everything comes back to the norm. And then you'll see a big cut in the stock, or you're going to see the stock for years trade at current levels. At the time after the split, it'll be around $50, $60 a share. All right, let's move on. Let's talk a little bit of AI for people, because AI is a big thing now these days. And what we're looking at is not NVIDIA, but Adobe. They're in the software infrastructure. They start talking about AI. Their symbol is ADBE. Only 1.1% shares float. On the short side, 87% institutional owned. PE ratio, well, 42.3, but the whole industry's at 48.7. Price to sales, 11.8 versus 10. Price to book value, 86.1. Industry is at 165. And then price to cash flow, 31.4 versus 29.9. We do have a PEG ratio of 2.5. That is more expensive than the industry at 2. They had done a pretty good job growing their earnings, up 16.5% over last year, but that's half the industry at 30.2%. And sales for Adobe, well, they increased by 7.8%. That's half the industry at 15.5. 5-year growth rate from the analysts on our earnings for Adobe is at 12.3%, not as good as the industry at 16.5. They do not pay a dividend. I don't think one company we talked about today, Jace, had a dividend, did they? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Non-dividend day today, the equities we're talking about. Current ratio, 1.3 versus 1.5. That's okay. Debt to equity is very good. It is 0.3 versus 1.8. Net profit margin, very good. 28% versus 21.4. Again, for every dollar they bring in, they keep 28 cents. And return on equity, 32.9. We like a 15 or better.
Look at the current price here for Adobe, and their ticker symbol ADBE. It's $499.52. I see the 52-week low here, $331.89, and the high, $638.25. It's gotten off to a rougher start than a lot of its AI counterparts, I guess I'll say, as it's down about 16-17%. I know when they reported earnings, they were lackluster, and I think maybe that AI hype wasn't as exciting for people. Mm-hmm. It looks like it led people to leave the stock. So is it a buying opportunity? I don't know. Let's take those numbers going forward. I go out to November 2025. I see estimated earnings per share here, $20.36. That would give us a target sell price of $337.98. So even with the pullback here, it's still well above our target sell, as it's still close to about $500 in terms of its current level.
Oh, closing bell already. I was going to say, and that brings us back to the word counterfactual in the beginning of the show. There is a closing bell. Thank you for listening to the Smart Investing Show. It is for informational purposes only. It should not be used as investment advice. If you'd like to discuss in more detail your investment needs, have other investment questions, feel free to call myself, Brent Wilsey, or Chase Wilsey at 858-224-0004. Again, that's 858-224-0004, or go to our website, smartinvesting2000.com. That's smartinvesting2000.com. You can get the podcast there if you missed part of the show, and the newsletter as well. We'll be back next week right here on the Smart Investing Show.
So amusing to think I did all that.